Hello, you're listening to Queer Everything, a queer of color podcast about thriving in the world while being at odds with it. I'm Lena Rafiq Sheikh. In this episode, I continue my conversation with Mix Yaffa, a queer, indigenous, displaced Palestinian person who currently serves as the executive director of the Muslim Alliance for Sexual and Gender Diversity. In the last episode, Yaffa talked about their and their family's history. And in this one, we talk more about the challenging and necessary work they do with queer Muslims and Palestinians. I'm struck by Yaffa's commitment to doing work that is really hard. You may recall the efforts earlier this year by a conservative coalition of mostly American Muslim groups to ally themselves with right-wing efforts in the U.S. to target queer and trans people. LGBT people face homophobia and transphobia everywhere right now, and Muslim queer people are often in the double bind of facing transphobia and homophobia in their home communities and Islamophobia in the queer community and the world at large. So community spaces are more important than ever right now. Yaffa is also the author of a collection of poetry called Blood Orange, which just dropped on November 16th. She tells the story of how she was inspired to write it in this episode as well. All profits from the collection go to supporting queer and trans Palestinian work on the ground and elsewhere, so please consider getting yourself a copy. Links are in the show notes. Welcome. Right now, it's October 29th, right? We're 3 weeks into this horrific devolvement of what's been happening in Israel and Palestine. And you reached out to me because I'd been trying to prioritize. I mean, this season has gotten very queer Muslim heavy to begin with, and now I've been trying to prioritize recording, releasing, hopefully things that are useful and platform queer Palestinian folks. And I'm curious, I don't even know how to ask, like, how has it been for you? But what is happening right now?
Yeah, it's definitely been a lot in all the ways. I tried reminding myself and reminding others that as we're going through this, we're not meant to be okay. Mm-hmm. Like, it's actually healthy for us to not be okay. It would be mm-hmm. very anti everything that makes us human to be just fine with everything.
Yes. Yes.
And also, if people need to numb it all and shut off, right, as queer Palestinians, I also get that as well. So I don't want to shame that either. For me, that's always such a powerful reminder of that. It's actually okay. We're not supposed to be okay. And I will say it's been, I think, especially for those of us who were politicized from really young ages, right, and have seen this happen again and again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So many of us could have told you 3 weeks ago where we were going to end up today.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes.
And I think about sometimes, and I'm like, that to me doesn't move me towards helplessness and hopelessness. It actually moves me towards the opposite, because I'm like, it's actually so easy to fix things. It's so easy to break patterns when you understand them. And what happens often is we just don't want to think about them. And so it's definitely been a lot to carry as it's been happening. I do have some family in Gaza. Family that we're kind of distant to. I was telling you earlier of just because we've never been able to really see them. They've never really been able to see us, with the exception of one great uncle. And I think one of his kids had come to visit us when my grandfather was still alive. Mm. And so it's interesting of really reflecting on that, of how this war, these 75 years have separated us in so many different ways. Mm. And to the point of, I don't even know who's dead or alive. The last couple of days have been really difficult because of the entire blackout that happened, but also with the release of all of the names. Mm. And I'm glad that they released that. I think it's important for people to know those names. But I went on there and just looking at, like, the children's names, the, like, 3,000 children, and being able to recognize at least 20 to 30 family members, right, who I've never met, right? They're children. I don't know if they know I exist.
Yeah.
I'm able to know who their parents are and things like that because of how names work. But it's been so heavy to carry that. And It was my mom's birthday a couple of days ago, and speaking to her and just wishing her happy birthday. And obviously she didn't do anything to celebrate, but for her to also be like, we don't know what's happening, which people over there, it's almost like phone trees, right? Like you always know everything that's going to happen, that's happening. Like whenever, as soon as someone dies, you always find out immediately because someone is going to tell you, because we make sure people are informed. And so for them to even have that blackout reaching them, I think was a lot to take in. And then at the same time, really carrying the weight of the queerness and transness pieces of specifically people. And I get a lot of hate. I've gotten a lot of hate since I was 19. I've been dealing with death threats since I was 19. It's just a part of being vocal and being public about a lot of these things. But then having the enormous amount of people specifically talking about how like my life would be in jeopardy in Palestine if Palestine was free, and like the audacity of that, the caucasity of that in particular, right?
People saying like, that to you.
Right. Yeah. Like, how dare you deflect from literally like genocide and ethnic cleansing, not even one or the other, literally both of them at the same time by making assumptions about who we are as people and who we've always been. And then carrying that, you know, with the queerphobia and the transphobia that happened over the summer from some of the conservative Muslim community members, right? And how that's been impacting our community the last 6 months or so. And how that's devastated families, how that's really created lines between, like, there's no more plausible deniability. And now with all of this happening, a lot of us are still showing up to the protests. We're still showing up in spaces. And also we know that we're not going to be held as queer and trans Palestinians in a lot of the mainstream spaces. And then having to take on the labor of us having to do that. We've been building spaces forever, right? So building additional spaces. But again, just carrying the weight of that, of as all of this is happening, who's really investing in Palestinians? And actually about a week ago, something, Meshed had done a fundraiser a few weeks ago prior to all of this starting. And so we had like a final post that was posted during it. And even our own community was like, oh, like this is not the time to take away from on the ground stuff. And it's like, who do y'all think queer and trans Palestinians on the ground are going to? Like, who do you think is trying to hold queer and trans Palestinians here, right? Or anywhere? And we just don't have access to those things. And so I'm also seeing a lot of things like that. And I think our community just needed to like have more transparency and awareness of to recognize that this work has always been ongoing, but also has been happening quite a lot over the last few weeks, but also of witnessing that, right? Where it's so beautiful that people are donating to things on the ground. That's so important. But also recognizing of that most people donate once or twice, right? They donate to just one place. And so a lot of the funding that would have gone to queer and trans Palestinian things is no longer going to that. And even to queer trans Palestinian spaces here, like even there's this really cool radical queer space that's co-owned by a queer Palestinian out here. And they don't have rent for December, right? Because they're constantly being pushed out and things like that. And to me, it's not an either or, but recognizing of that, it's really like the queer and trans Palestinians who have to weigh that, who have to hold both of those. And then also witnessing like, some of the people who came after us as queer and trans Palestinians back in May and June posting about our liberation. But it's like, but no, that's not how that works. And also wanting to honor of like, we do want all the voices. And also we can't forget how these things have been coming up and that they will need to be addressed as we're moving towards liberation. Using systems of oppression to liberate a space does not liberate it, right? It just changes the forms of violence within it. And just being cognizant of how, whether it's queer and trans Palestinians or just other queer and trans non-white folks, whether it's Muslims, whether it's global majority folks, whoever it is, that we're carrying the brunt of that weight and that labor as we're doing this, but also recognizing that there are even fewer resources to go and make those things happen. So it's been a lot. I'm going to be really honest of, like I was saying, of we were already trying to build out different things. Like our community has been asking Actually, I can probably just share it here. Like everything that we do at Meshed, everything's really transparent. We just don't always have time to announce everything. Basically, what we're trying to build right now is a case management system to be able to support individuals with different resources as they need it most. Right. Meshed and almost every other queer and trans Muslim org receives requests almost every single day across every single need. So whether it's food, housing, financial support, immigration support, legal support, employment support, whatever it is, every single thing is not being fulfilled right now. And so wanting to build that out a little bit so that we can actually respond, because right now no one has space and capacity to be able to really respond to those needs. And then the other thing that we're building that I think would have been really, really wonderful to have these last 3 weeks. And initially we were going to launch it next May, but with everything happening, I've been trying to do a lot of work to try to secure funding to be able to launch it earlier, is a queer and trans Muslim peer support helpline. So entirely peer run, just for people to have access to people who get it, right? It, like, it's different in different places around the world. Like the UK and what is the US and Canada, none of the helplines that currently exist are safe for us. The vast majority of them are non-consent based helplines, so they can call the cops on you for whatever reason. It was going to be a disaster a month ago, but now it's going to be even worse. And then unfortunately, even the consent based ones that are specific to like trans folks, for example, are incredibly Islamophobic. And so our community has recognized that we've needed something for a really long time, but community members have been asking us for this for a while. A lot of my background is in peer support and specifically peer curriculum development and training, and I've worked with various helplines. So making it happen is actually the easy part. It's really just the funding piece, because we're also really intentional about, we don't want this to be a volunteer run helpline, which is how a lot of places can operate with very small budgets. But we've heard so many stories of people losing their jobs just these last 3 weeks, let alone the last 6 months, right? And the last year and going into next year. Like, our people need money, right? Like, we're not fulfilled work-wise and financially. We don't come from generational wealth, like across the board. And over 50% of like the Meshed community right now is Black, both who have like ancestors who were enslaved, right, during the slave trade and have been here since then, and then others from different African countries who immigrated to the US at some point in time. But recognizing of like our community does not have generational wealth. Like, we don't have access to these resources. We talk often about going to therapy and things like that, which is really wonderful. And also recognizing of a bunch of our community is uninsured here.
Right.
And it's always so, like, subhanAllah, like, how it works. Like, people always ask me, of like, how do you find the people that you work with, like, from, like, my peer support or the death work or the birthing work or any of the different kind of work? And I'm like, people just find me, or it just happens by accident. And the amount of times where I will just text someone who I've met once, right, potentially years ago, or was just, like, randomly on a call with, and be like, hey, like, just checking in, how are you? And the amount of times they're like, I was just assaulted and I didn't know who to contact. And recognizing that that's increasing, right? We saw an enormous increase over the last 3 weeks. Like I've said, of like, every time I've gone into San Francisco, I have been harassed. And in particular, every time I've gone on Castro Street, right? So the gay neighborhood in San Francisco, every single time it's happened. The one time it didn't happen, I was wearing this kifia, and I think they just didn't. I'm pointing to a kifia that's from Yaffa, people who can't see it. And it's a blue and black kifia. And most people don't recognize it as such. And so, yeah. And so we're working on building all of those. And so, again, it's been really heavy, a lot of work. It's just been a lot. And also at the same time, yeah, I feel really fortunate of like being in an organization, in a space where we're also really mindful of not martyring ourselves and not taking on too much. And so, like, I know that if I needed to take next month off, I could. And I recognize that the vast majority of people, unfortunately, don't get to do that. Although I have been encouraging people to go on, if they are able to, if they're like within tech and things like that, to go on FMLA, so family medical leave, for 3 months, because those places are not worthy of our labor, and we're going through a lot, and yeah, they just don't deserve us.
That's really important work that you're setting up. So you're trying to get it to the point where this helpline, this national US-based helpline, is up and running. Okay. Yeah. Wow. Is there anything else you want to highlight in terms of things that you're doing now?
The one other thing that I would like to highlight is, as all of this has been happening over the last few weeks, actually, literally just a couple of weeks ago, I decided to publish a short poetry book about Palestine. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. writing has always been my way of expressing myself and really processing things. And so I can always tell how much is happening externally from how much writing I get done. And so basically over a weekend, I ended up writing this book, which was really interesting to me because it's usually really hard for me to write about Palestine. That's always been the hardest area to write about. Mm-hmm. But with everything going on, literally a couple of weekends ago, 28 poems just came out immediately. They just happened. And so I'm going to be publishing that November 13th. Pre-orders are up right now, and 100% of the profits from that are going to go to queer and trans Palestinians on the ground and queer and trans Palestinian work that's happening in other places. Mm-hmm. I'm really cognizant of how, as all of this is happening, some of the queer and trans Palestinians in the diaspora or work that's being led by queer and trans Palestinians, a lot of that might be dying over the next few months, unfortunately, just for lack of resources. And so just based on different needs, 100% of those profits are going to go to both those different areas. So the book is called Blood Orange, and it's about 32 poems, I want to say, of just different reflections on displacement, the diaspora, and in particular, what I really want to amplify is also utopia building and the hope that exists with all of this.
If you want to share one, you're very welcome to.
I would be happy to. I'll read one called Lines and Circle. You drew a line when you said you didn't have to tolerate queer and trans people. You drew a line when you said a settler colonial state is valid in defending itself leading to genocide. You drew a line when you said cops are necessary to maintain the peace. You drew a line when you said all lives matter, black on black crime, a few bad apples, as if the orchard didn't need torching. You drew a line when you said pro-life, it's a woman's choice, that this is unlivable when rights have never been ours. You drew a line when you said anyone blue, as if blue and red are not siblings. You've drawn every line there could be while we wait for a circle.
That's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
So when did you write all of these?
So I wrote, other than like three of them, I wrote all of them literally over eclipse weekend. So over here, there was the solar eclipse that was kind of visible. And so it was on a Saturday morning. Between Saturday morning and Sunday night, basically, it was just, they all just needed to come out. And it's always interesting for me where, like, with a lot of my writing, because so much of it is to process my own things and just make sense of the world. And to be honest, also express the most dramatic pieces of my soul, right? That don't usually come out in other ways day to day.
Sure.
That I forgot most of these poems. And so even like this poem right now, reading it, I was like, wow, this is really great. I really went deep there. Like, because it was just different ways to process. And so I kind of just let them all go. And so I'm excited for people to be able to read them and to raise some funds for queer and trans Palestinian work that's happening and just our needs. But mostly just really, really hopeful that folks are able to be held a little bit within the words. I know a lot of queer and trans folks in particular, queer and trans Palestinians, and even outside of that, just Palestinians in general, with everything happening, it's just the severe distrust that's coming out of this, right? The severe betrayal of like people even within their own family members, with their coworkers, with their friends, with their partners, with their children's schools. I'm supporting this family where where the school called like Child Protective Services on them because they were like, they're Palestinian, so they must be terrorists. And so all of these things happening, right? And how few places
this shit
there
all
are.
Over again. Yeah,
exactly. And I think that makes it almost worse because most of us remember that from 9/11. Most of us even remember 2016 and the elections back then. And and that was something that queer and trans Muslims felt everywhere around the world, like not even just here. And that was really a lot of our motivation for a lot of the work that we were already planning to do, is that like we know what's coming and it was expedited, right? And now it's happening on this enormous scale and people rightfully, right, feel entirely on their own, right? Like who can hold our pain? And it's, you know, one of the spaces that we ran for Meshed, and I ran it here in person, and I ran one that was virtual. In person one, we literally just did a meditation, yin yoga space, some sound healing, and just a sharing circle. And the first time we did it, someone was like, "This is the first time in years that I feel like I can keep going," which is so beautiful. But also for me, like holding the immense sadness of that was just 90 minutes, right? Like 90 minutes into this practice and recognizing of most people don't get 90 minutes of a practice. And even like the second time someone was like, "My mind has been racing for 20 years and this is the first time it's quieted." And like, I love the work that I do and I think I'm amazing. I think most people are amazing. I think everyone has amazingness within them. And so I'm like, yes, this is great. And also I'm like, how sad is that people are yearning for something for decades and it could be provided in 90 minutes to 2 hours. And recognizing of most people and places don't have that. And so I'm hoping that Blood Orange, the book, can almost like serve as like a pseudo space to just hold people. And that's the feedback that I've gotten from people who have read it, just as a companion as we're going through this. And so I've actually also been thinking of maybe releasing the ebook earlier. It's harder to release like the actual physical copies of the book earlier, but at least then people have something that they could hold on to, just even as an ebook that they could read and just know that there are a lot of us out here. We just, due to systemic barriers, we're not permitted to interact, right, and intersect in the ways that we need to just be able to hold one another.
Well, if you decide to, let me know. I will include the link in the show notes. So
amazing.
So Yalvet, this was the first question that I wanted to ask when you introduced yourself, and then there was like so many interesting threads to follow up on. Tell me about your death doula work.
So a lot of the backgrounds that I came into, just subhanAllah, just happened. And so I accidentally became a peer support specialist. Basically, I won a scholarship for like $500, and I reached out to someone that I knew who was in like the mental health field, who was also my second grade teacher. So lots of random coincidences. And I was like, "Hey, do you all have like any volunteer opportunities? Because I have some money and I can come somewhere." And which I think back to now, that was me at like 22. And now I'm like, if someone gives me $500, like I am not volunteering anywhere. Like I am going to buy things. Like I am going by a lake somewhere. I'm going to the beach. Like I don't care. I'll do work from there. But back then I was like, oh, let me go volunteer. Even though, which was really interesting because I was living in classrooms at the time. This was my senior year of college. But anyways, I was like, I'm going to go and volunteer. But she got back to me and she was like, oh, well, we don't do volunteers, but we have this training program. And it was the peer support 2-week training. And I had just enough money to be able to afford it. It was all the money that I had, but I was like, cool, I trust this person. Let me just go and do it. And I went, did it. And it was absolutely beautiful to get into a concept that feels a lot more authentic to like my indigeneity and even like how we are as like Muslims in terms of how we hold each other as a community. And I think for just global majority folks in general. And so I was mentioning earlier of how I started working with unaccompanied trans minors who are refugees. And just little by little, as I was working with that group, as I was working with other groups, and for the most part, my entire peer support career, I've always only worked with the most marginalized of the most marginalized. So basically, anyone who had no one else to turn to, I'll work with them. If I can refer you to someone else, I'm going to refer you. Because like I mentioned, I also had my engineering full-time job. I had another full-time job within nonprofits. And then starting in 2017, I also became a full-time peer support trainer. And so I had three full-time jobs. And so very limited capacity. But it was really through that realizing of people die, right? Mm-hmm. Both the people that I work with, but more importantly, the people around them. Or people have had so much loss, especially with accompanied refugees. Mm-hmm. They've lost their entire families, both because of the war and also because of the move, potentially. Where now they're completely separated from it and even just fully separated from community because the only people that they're working with are predominantly going to be white social workers who are not going to really take them to a mosque. And we're constantly like, no, Muslims are bad, right? And all of the Islamophobia was showing up. Mm. And so just grief support work in particular was always there. But as I got more and more into that, more specialized death work was necessary in terms of supporting people as they were trying to navigate, even just like, how does a person die here in terms of what does that look like within the medical system, within the legal system, within how you get buried, which I think is an area that I would love to explore a lot more, whether with Meshed or just see other like death practitioners, like Korean trans Muslim ones, really like think about of like when we die as queer and trans people, who gets to wash us? Who prays on us, right? Do we want to be in a mosque? Do we want somewhere else? And most people haven't really thought of that. And so just little by little started doing more of that work. Mm-hmm. Majority of it was always going to be grief work. And so I started doing that work years before I became, quote unquote, a certified death doula. And it was only really over the last couple of years that I've actually had more time and space after not having to do three full-time jobs and being able to actually have like a regular amount of work to do and things like that I was like, oh, let me explore this and actually go into the trainings and realizing of this is both for birthing and death work. Because it's kind of very similar in a lot of ways. Realizing of like, oh, like, okay, cool. I've been doing it properly and sometimes better than what I'm being trained on here. But it was really just working with our community, to be honest. Like our community, unfortunately, has so little resources available to us and so little pathways to access the resources that are even available to us. As we're navigating anything life-related, as we're having children, as we're birthing people, as we're getting married, right? Or going into like polycules and things like that. In terms of like getting like this, another area that I accidentally got to is like relationship counseling and work. So I'll work with couples and throuples and polycules and things like that. But to find someone who actually understands the context of being queer trans Muslim, right? And within that, right, global majority, mostly displaced or, right, or descendants of enslaved folks, right? Like, and all of those things that are compounded against us so much, and there's so few options available that I've just, where I could, I've always just tried filling as many gaps as I could. Nowadays, thankfully, I will say I work a lot less with one-on-one with people, mostly because especially with the role that I have now and just with all the experience that I've had over the years, I know a lot more people that I would be comfortable sending other people to. And so it's not, you know, when I first started, it was like, I don't know who to send you to, so I will do it. But now, thankfully, I feel like there's more. There are so many queer and trans Muslim death doulas for some reason. It's kind of cool. Every time I like bring it up, another random person's like, oh my God, me too. And so we're building that. We're starting to have more and more of those practices that to me are just practices that our people have always carried. Like we've always known how to birth in community and to die in community. And it's really just more the global north ideas of individualism that have us birthing and dying individually.
Right.
And unfortunately how that's been accepted by some of our cultures and incorporated now, right? Where if you're a trans Muslim person who's birthing a child, it's so hard for you to have community as you're going through that. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah, but yeah, so just really accidentally got into it and mm-hmm. just seeing a need and trying to do what I can.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So at this just absolutely, I don't even know what to call this moment. We're at this moment, you are from where you sit. What do you want to say to people? And I say people as like a very wide audience. It could be our community. It could be, could be not our community. What do you like to say to people?
Very different things depending on who I talk to. I will say for queer and trans Palestinians in particular, and even broader for Palestinians in general, and broader than that, all the folks that are experiencing different forms of ethnic cleansing and genocide. So folks in Sudan, in Armenia, in the Congo, everything that like Haiti is dealing with, there's just so much out there. But I want to invite people to really envision utopia within it of like, I love thinking of what is a free Palestine? What does that look like? What does that look like for us to have some kind of destination? And I find that that just brings so much warmth into our lives. To me, this is the time to envision utopia because it's the hardest time to envision utopia because it feels as if the entire world is falling apart. And I think sometimes you forget that it's when the world falls apart that a new one rises instead of it. And so this is actually when new worlds are born. And I would love for folks to just want to invite folks to feel the warmth of that if they're ready to. For their broader community, just immense gratitude and also of really asking them to center the queerness and the transness and the Palestinianness and the disabilityness, all the things that makes Palestinians Palestinians. And also to remind people that they don't get to define that for any group that's not theirs. And so if you're a Muslim person broadly, right, and you're saying that there's no space for queerness in Palestine, but you're not Palestinian, you don't get an opinion. Like you can step away, go do the work that you need to. Yeah. And then beyond that, for people who haven't cared, you know, I was thinking about this earlier, one of like the signs of like the day of judgment, depending on what people like believe in and things like that. Cause I don't really define it in the way that a lot of like conservatives, Muslims would. But there's a time where basically like so much of the truth has been revealed. It's so obvious, it's so there, and people still deny it, that it gets to a place where when they do accept it, after everything is over, that it doesn't matter anymore. Like the reality is a free Palestine is going to happen. And also I know from all of my experiences that all the people fighting us the most right now, they're going to come around then. They're going to be like, oh yeah, we were so supportive. And for me, I was thinking about that and kind of like just getting some warmth in the reality and like in the power of being able to step away from those people, regardless of whether they get it or not. And I think I've had to do that just as a queer and trans Muslim in a lot of ways, where just to not be attached to whether or not people come, that like grow and move forward. And also recognizing of, I still have autonomy of even when you've grown and you've come over to this side, I still have full autonomy to not to be around you. And I think that's a beautiful reminder for myself personally. And this isn't like a threat or anything. It's just like I don't think they care. And this isn't denying people's humanities. Like I can honor that every single person, even the worst of people within what's happening right now, like even Netanyahu, even like Biden, deep inside there's a soul within them. Like there's humanity there somewhere. And also like I can wholeheartedly still be like, yeah, but like we don't have to vibe. Like we don't have to be around each other just because now you're saying you're supportive or you actually are supportive. And I think most people don't recognize that, of that we get to build with the people we want to build with. We don't have to build with everyone. And this isn't not wanting to build with people who are more marginalized than us because we're problematic. This is the opposite. This is the most marginalized. Don't ever have to work with anyone who's not. We still have that autonomy, and I wanted to share that more as a reminder for myself first and foremost, because I find that the world tries to teach us the opposite of that. Mm. If someone wants to show up, you have to work with them. And I keep remembering of like how with like the prophet and like, and his uncle with like Washi, who killed the prophet's uncle, and how the prophet fully like embraced him and was like, of course, you're a part of this ummah, you're a part of this community, you are everything. And also, I can't look at you because it's so hard to look at you. And how valid that is, right? Versus how we're made to feel that that's so wrong. And it's like, we could have accountability, we could have transformative justice, we could have all of the most beautiful of things, which are like areas I specialize in. And also, I don't have to hang out with you. I could even really like you as a person, but it doesn't mean I have to hang out with you. And I really wish more people knew that and learned that from younger ages of we don't have to be friends with everyone. We don't even have to be friends to build together. If like those are very different things. Everything is different and they could live in their own worlds.
Mm. Yeah. Oof. If people want to find out more about Masjid, how do they do that?
So the two best ways is to, one, sign up for our newsletter at themasjid.org. Scroll to the bottom, you can sign up for the newsletter. That's the best way. And then the other best way is to follow us on social media. Again, The Masjid on Instagram, Facebook. I think we're on Twitter, but we're most active on Instagram. And so definitely feel free to follow us there. If you are signed up for the newsletter, you'll still get all the information. I'm starting to move more people towards the newsletter versus just social media, because we've seen how easily it is for social media platforms to shadow ban us. Yay! Yeah. So definitely sign up for the newsletter and then follow on social media. And then, yeah, you'll generally get all the updates, those two platforms. And then you're welcome to follow me personally as well, where you can learn a lot more about things like Blood Orange and other fundraising opportunities for queer and trans Palestinians. And on Instagram and TikTok, I'm just Yafas Utopia, so Yaffas Utopia on both of those platforms.
Fantastic. Fantastic. And then who is Masjid for, broadly speaking?
So Masjid is for all queer and trans Muslims. We don't define who that is within those umbrellas. So I've been telling people, and we've always defined Muslim like this. By define it, I mean we have not defined it, but it's basically anyone who feels that that's a space for them. And so it could be folks who grew up in Muslim families but are not Muslim, who were raised Muslim as children and are no longer Muslim. For people who are Muslim and they define it as like more religious and practicing and things like that. Folks who view Islam as more of a spiritual belief system, and literally anybody within all of that. So we also work with, like, especially now with everything happening in Palestine, of we're also working with like Christian Palestinians and even like some conversations with like Jewish Palestinians, but who understand those identities, where like I'm always cognizant of this, of a Christian Palestinian and a Muslim Palestinian have way more in common, than like white Christians and Christian Palestinians, right? And so really anyone who feels that that is a space that they would identify with culturally, racially, in whatever ways, it's open to everyone. We don't police the space, so no one's ever going to ask. We just hold that our community members just honor that. And when they feel it's the right space for them, it's the right space for them.
Fantastic. Good. Well, thank you for that explicitness. I've known people, myself included, who have been hesitant to be in Muslim affinity space because maybe they've left the religion or they don't vibe with it, they don't have a practice. So thank you for the explicitness of that non-defining. Yaffa, thank you so much for taking the time to come on here and speak to us.
Thank you so much for everything that you're doing. I think you were the first platform that I saw centering queer Palestinians. And so even if what was happening was not happening, I would have loved to be connected. And it's just such important work. And so I'm just so grateful that you've been taking on that labor and centering our voices as this is happening. Because again, I have not seen many places do it.
I'm deeply upset that it's become relevant now. And, you know, it's super, super important to me. I am holding you and all of my Palestinian friends, dear friends, in my heart right now.
I don't know about you all. I struggle sometimes not to feel helpless. And then I remember that there are a lot of us, as evidenced by the unprecedented amount of protesting, calling, efforts to educate, and honestly, people raising their voices against the injustice of oppression against Palestinians on a scale like this for the first time. When I feel despair getting close, I think about what things would look like if I and the huge swell of people who find what is happening abhorrent and unacceptable were discouraged into inaction. Inaction and despair serve the status quo. So, especially when I feel helpless, I look around for some small thing I can do. Whether that's uplifting people's voices on social media or on here, making calls, or spreading information and helping to educate people, whatever I have the ability to do, even in my little corner of the world. There's a beautiful quote that comes to mind from the late Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and it goes, "Do your little bit of good where you are. It's those little bits of good put together that overwhelm the world." So keep showing up and keep raising your voice and keep being powerful. So much love and solidarity to you all. Until next time.